Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Health Points, where we talk about everything and anything gamification and health. I'm Ben, and we have my co-host Pete.
Hi, everyone.
And joining us today, we have Mikhail, who is a seasoned player in the field of gamification and game-based learning. Since running his first project, The Hunt, in 2003, he made and played over 70 different formats with thousands of people, groups, teams, and companies worldwide, ranging from serious games to escape rooms. Mikhail lives to design games and use the immense power of play in the real world. He is a World Experience Organization founding member, was in the RISE Global Top 25 Gamification Guru list, and has spoken many times at the Gamification Europe Conference. It's great to have you on the show today.
Yeah, good day. Glad to be here.
Brilliant. Let's get going then. I mean, your CV is mixed and varied, but also really deep into gamification. What was your background to get to where you are now?
Yeah, quite interesting. So I'll sit on my talking chair and just go with it. Yeah, I started out a primary school teacher. I was educated to become a primary school teacher. So I had a mild interest in learning. I also had an interest in theater and an interest in tech. So like 20, 25 years ago, oh my God, I feel old. I was working in the early days of telecom and mobile phones. So my really first career move was being a trainer in retail. So my job was developing and giving training for retail. And while I did this, I quite broadened the definition because I thought my work should not be giving training. It should be making sure that the people in my groups actually learn something. And to me, that's quite a difference because I see you laughing, Pete. We can see each other. You can agree, right?
I agree.
Yeah. It's like a teacher is a teacher, or labels are important, you know? If you call someone a waiter, what is he going to do? Wait. So if you training is not about giving training, you have a responsibility to have these people learn something. So I became very much interested in how people learn. And I'm not totally convinced that the way I did that was either the best one or the most fun one or the most efficient one. So I'll tell you this anecdote because I have been working for a company called Retail Result. And I was training, and I did a lot of training with young salespeople who actually worked in retails and shops all throughout the country. So what I did quite often was a two-day training, and well, it was 20 years ago, so I was younger, but I really, because I had this educational background, I tried very hard, did my best to make this training as interesting and engaging as possible. But I would always see that at the end of day one, these young people would doze off. And I thought I was doing so well. I used humor in my training. I tried to make it a bit interactive, but they would doze off. So at the night of the first day, I always meet them after dinner in the bar over at around 9 o'clock in the evening. So at one point, I was sitting in the bar, 9:30 in the evening, and there was no one of my group was there. And I thought, where are these people? So I went up into a hotel room, second floor, and I heard this rumbling noise, and it became louder and louder. So I kicked in a door, and there they were, all my 12 people, that group. And they hooked up their Nintendo 64 to the TV in the hotel room, and there were two or three people playing, and the rest was sitting around, taking turns, and the group that a few hours before were totally dull and sleeping, now were totally thrilled, into the moment, having a great time, improving themselves. And I thought, are these the same people? And then the next day, I returned to my program, my same dual program, but something changed in my mind there. So, and this happened, I saw this more and more, and I think a few months later, I went up to my boss and I told him, I'm not giving training anymore. I quit. I'm not quitting the job, but I quit doing this. I think learning can be more efficient, more fun, and we should stop putting people in a stuffy room under fluorescent lighting in cardboard tables listening to a dude like me. So luckily, I could found another project for the company, for the same company I used to train, in which we played an immense alternate reality game called The Hunt. And that's launched in 2003 and still played today. And for me, that was my first game-based learning project, our gamification project, although the word didn't exist at the time. And I thought, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. Make learning so interesting, so engaging that it would play and feel like a game that people would enjoy, have a lot of fun, and in the meanwhile, would learn a lot.
Kicking in a hotel door room to find everyone playing Nintendo, and that was a flashbulb moment making you realize the importance of gamification. It would be great to go a bit deeper into The Hunt then and to tell listeners about kind of the experience of The Hunt and what it looks like and how it plays then and even today.
Yeah. Actually, so you told in the intro, I did quite some talks about games and gamification. I think The Hunt was and still is my favorite example. I think you can check it out, the-hunt.com. When I worked for this company, there was a training company, and we also worked with like 100 mystery visitors. And they would go into a shop, let's say a telephone shop, where you could buy phones in that time. And their objective was to measure how salespeople were doing. So are they actively greeted? Are they engage in sales conversation? And afterwards, they would write a report, and all the reports would come back to the company, and every manager of the company would read the report. Then there were always two possibilities. Either they scored great, which was never a reason to improve. Said, hey, we had a mystery visitor. We did great, so we don't have to improve. Or they would have a shitty score, and they would have all kinds of excuses. Yeah, there was just that moment, and it was a busy Saturday afternoon. So there was never an incentive to change. So it was a one-moment feedback. So that wasn't really working. And on the other hand, I already told you, I didn't have the impression that my training was working. So we had no really way of measuring. One, did they learn something? And how can we measure the impact? So I went up to my boss at the moment that I told him I don't want to train anymore, but I have this idea for a game called The Hunt. I want to use the complete sales force of this company. There was like 100 shops of about 10 employees. So total force of 1,000 people scattered throughout the land, the Netherlands. And I want to play a game with them on top of the real world. So I want to play this game during their daytime job. And it's called The Hunt. So at one time, I did a kickoff with these people, and it would only be with their managers. So I had 100 managers together in one location in the center of the country. I showed them a 3-minute introduction video telling them this. In the next 5 weeks, you will be visited by the mystery visitor. It can be anyone entering your shop. Large, tall, small, fat girl. It can be anyone entering your shop. You have one objective. Discover the mystery man for a number of times. And you can do this by actively approach them, engage in a conversation, and using a specific code word. So we would, for 4 or 5 weeks, we would send in a shitload of mystery shoppers, and we built a back end. You have to imagine, this is 2003, 2004. So they would only have one PC back of the house, but we would have made like a chat and a forum and a leaderboard with how many mystery men you would have discovered. And people would play against each other, and they would share hints. For example, if I was visited by an attractive young blonde, then I would write on the message board, oh, you were just visited by a mystery man, and it was this dark, red-headed, fat man. let's say, and so there would be co-creation. And what happened during those 4 or 5 weeks is engagement went up hugely among people working in the stores. There was really this thrill and this excitement of anyone walking into those doors. You could feel there's something happening in this store. They became more creative. They became more interactive with the customers. And also, people that were just visiting that store that were not part of the game, they experienced that there was something. So in the end, they also sold more and they trained themselves, because this was 4 or 5 weeks in a row. They trained themselves to actively engage with people, to trigger certain words. It was amazing. So the thing that I tried to train them within 2 days, now I did that for 5 weeks in a row on the floor, meanwhile having great fun and boosting results in the moment. So
what I really like about that is that even though the people who knew they were past the hunt, like they were having a great time and playing, but ultimately anyone in the venue became part of that game, because all the actual players became engaged with non-players to identify different code words that are out there. Yeah. Brilliant.
It is. And it was amazing that someone would enter the store and you would, you would make eye contact with your colleagues saying, oh, could this be him? Okay, you better. Okay, you get that one. And meanwhile, someone else would approach the store. Okay, you cover that one. You cover this one. And we could actually measure that just saying hello to a customer before the hunt was like 64%, because we measured that in regular reports, and it went up to 89%. So that was just one metric. But also the sales were obvious. The extra sales were obvious. It was amazing that this could be done not by training, but live playing a game. So it was my favorite example then, and it still is. That's why it's been running for 20 years. And because of its success at that moment, I knew this is what I want to do. And soon after, I quit that job and I founded Living Story in my company to dedicate my life to doing this.
Now, I know you've done a lot of different games since then. Particularly, you've become famous for escape rooms. Well, escape room design. You've designed a great escape room for our own conference at Gamification Europe before, which awesome. Everyone loved. And what I loved about that is you were able to design one for a really big audience. So for like, I think it was 80 to 100 people to take part at once.
Yeah, it was the first time we did that.
But I want to zoom past that. And if we've got time, we'll come back to escape rooms. Because actually what I was really keen to invite you here to talk about today was your more recent project, The Vanishing of Iris. And I like this because, A, it's obviously health-related, obviously to us, health-related, but also because it was podcast-related, and here we are on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Could you tell us a bit about Vanishing of Iris, The Vanishing of Iris, who it's aimed at helping, and maybe describe how people play?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have to explain what it is. It is like an interactive audio adventure. So it's basically an app, much like Spotify, where you listen to audio, preferably using your headset, but it's also like watching a Netflix series with your eyes closed, or like playing an adventure game with your eyes closed. So it's a dedicated app. And the great thing about it is you are the main character and you get to make decisions within that game. So it's a branching storyline. You can at any point choose to go by train or go by boat, take a left turn, take a right turn, talk to person A, talk to person B, and then your story would change and adapt. So technical sense, that's what audio podcast is. So it was very hard to label it. Is it a podcast? Is it an audio adventure? It wasn't made before, and because of the branching audio and the ability to make decisions in real time, We could not place it in any of the familiar podcast forums, so we couldn't put it on Spotify or anywhere else, so we made a dedicated app, and we called it the iPodcast. And why we call it the iPodcast, and it is an I, because we did this for the Dutch Eye Association. So they are an interest group for visually impaired people. So just in the Netherlands, there are like 300,000 people with a visual impairment. In the UK, it's 3.5. And I think in USA, it's like 11 million people. Not being entirely blind, but within every aspect. So they could be partially blind or only see black and white. So the Eye Association is there to create awareness that one, there are so many people having these conditions, and that, for instance, public spaces are not enough adapted to this, and to give you a feel of what these people encounter on a daily basis. That was actually what they wanted to achieve in an experience or a game. So how can we have ordinary people, it was a quite broad target group, experience what it is to become blind? That was actually the first idea. So we actually started talking about doing an escape room on a high traffic area. Let's say we do an escape room in Piccadilly Circus or in Amsterdam Central Station. But then it would only be like 4 or 5 people at a time, and they probably had to be somewhere. So that's when we came to think of, can we do something with audio? Because you can also experience that when you are blind. And why not? Audio is a great medium, and you can create very rich environments. So that's where the idea came from, to make an audio adventure. So we were inspired by podcasts, we were inspired by Netflix, like doing something which is a series with an overarching storyline. So what we did is actually develop a story with 6 episodes, and you can play, and they would come out in 6 weeks. So you would start in 1 week, and every week there would be a new episode. And there would, yeah. No, we did. Well, and that's with a lot of, we always say yes. Whenever we start with something, we say yes. But our company is called Living Story, and that's for a reason. We're really fond of story and storytelling. We're very big on that. So, we had a house. So we have 3 writers working on that. And I think it's fun to explain a bit about the story itself. So this story is about Phil. You play Phil. He's a 30-year-old character. And his aunt is gone missing. His aunt called Iris. And he has 72 hours to find her. So you are playing this character, and you find yourself in a number of situations and in an adventure chasing. It's like a Dan Brown-like experience, right? If you have read the thrillers of Dan Brown or maybe seen the movies, from location to location, come all over the country, meeting people. And during the time, his own eyesight gets worse and worse. So, and because you play that character, you will encounter that your vision gets narrower and narrower. And at a certain point, you don't see anything anymore. And that's what we build into the game, to find yourself in situations. And what does it do with you and with your freedom and your possibilities, and what can you rely on? So I can go about this for hours, but you get an idea.
I was going to say, I mean, you've said it's for visually impaired people. Kind of, what was the aim? What was the results you've seen by delivering the program as well?
Well, it's very hard to measure awareness, because that's what quite often games are used for. Hey, I didn't know that before. Now I did this experience, and now I know, oh, man, I'm not the only one, and I've got these people in my family or that I know of. Oh, this is what I come across to. And so the idea behind is that by experiencing it yourself, you have a say in maybe in politics or in policy when you make decisions about, for instance, public space that can impact people with visual impairment, or in education or health. So it's very hard to measure awareness. So that's immediately an answer to, can you somehow see the return on investment on this project? No, it's very hard.
Well, I guess what you can tell is how many people have listened, how many people have made choices, because you've got choices in the branching choice. I think how many people have made it through to the end. These are the things I'm interested in as well.
Yes, and I don't have the numbers now because the measuring is done with another company. We're most of the time for these projects, we are on the front side, we're on the design part. So I do know that it was well received, but on a quantitative level, I'm not sure. And I am sure that it would be great if we had more marketing so that we would have more reactions. And
Now, I'm aware one of the things I think had impact too, from having listened to you talk about this a little bit before, is my understanding of who you got involved to be the actors.
So there's actually a site, ipodcast.nl, and to make this project, we really work with the Eye Association. So when making the script, we use people from within their organization and their clients to help us out. So one of the first things we did in our research is they came over, blindfolded us, giving us sticks, and we got to experience ourselves what it was to walk around in a location relying on like sound and other. We went to a museum which was called the Museum, which was pitch dark, which was led by blind people to give us, it was an awesome experience. Imagine being in a pitch dark room and encountering everyday situations and objects. So that was very interesting. With the script, it was read by people who were blind, so they could give us valuable information. And then we used 40 actors to do all the audio and all the voices, all the roles. I think 70 to 80% of those people were blind or visually impaired. That was awesome. And also the site and the app that we made, even though that the target group was people like you and me with 100% eyesight, we also made the app available for people that were completely blind. So, for instance, the choices that you made are audio driven. So someone would ask you, okay, shall we take the train left or the train at your right? Or shall we go with, and then you have to say to the app, left, right, car, boat, opera, leave, stay. And that would, so this was, we got very good reactions from the community, of blind people, or people with an eyesight, that this was a kind of app that they really would love to see more of, use this technology, this level of inclusion.
I had this vision then of like wandering around a city in the Netherlands and there's people randomly saying opera and things as you walk past them because they're listening to this.
It is. You can listen to this anywhere, just on your own couch or in the train, wherever you are on the moment that you like. But I think...
What would you do differently next time? Would you do a audio story game again? What do you think would be best... You know, what could you have the most effect using it for? Have you had some thoughts about that?
I've thought about it, but to be honest, from my side, I wouldn't change that much because the whole process of making it was awesome, and because it was inspired by and led by people who really were experts in the field, I think what we've done is delivering the first real interactive podcast in the world. In that sense, if something was new, working with so many actors was great. So as a maker, and that's with a lot of products that we make, is that we love to see it to being used to the max, impacting a lot of people. But I don't always have a say in that as a developer or a maker. So I wouldn't have done much different, but I would hope for more of our projects that they would have a higher impact, which has more to do with marketing and other stuff than with the design itself.
What I love is about awareness raising, because greater empathy and understanding of people living with health conditions or people having impairments is so important societally for people to be more caring and understanding, but also within healthcare as well, for people to have a better understanding what it's like to support or treat people living with certain conditions. Now, I guess what's really interesting, why the podcast works, is because it is an entirely audio-based adventure. But do you think it can be applied to different health conditions or impairments to give people that insight and understanding and what it might be like?
Well, I think that any impairment or health challenge, you can think of something that is game inspired to create awareness. And there are great examples of that. I think games, game-based learning and gamification can be a big benefit. I don't not necessarily in this format, but this work, because it really works with visual impairment. But of course, I'm a big fan of game-based learning. So yeah. Yes, I have one fabulous project that is called 100 Ways to Die at Work.
That is a fantastic title for a game, okay?
Yeah. And actually, it's one of the things we do is we are giving a training about game-based learning. We've done a lot of those series. In one of the series, there was this this great woman, and it is her job to... I don't know what's the word in English, but she goes about health conditions and especially dangerous on the work floor, and she already wrote a book about it, and she's really an expert in her field, and she really would love to make a game about the many, many ways you could actually die in your work situation. So together with her, we developed a game. It's like it's a board game using a very large blueprint. You can put on a table at the start of your shift, wherever you're working, maybe in construction or wherever you're working. It's a 20 to 30 minute game. And the outset, there's a situation. And if you don't do something, someone will die within the next 20 or 30 minutes. And with you as your team, you have to take a number of decisions, walk across the blueprint, whether it's a garage or a studio, or there's a scenario called Victor's Fish Factory. It can be anywhere, but you come across all kinds of dangerous situations, and it can be about smoke development or emergency calling or icons on with dangerous goods. It can be about diesel motor emission. It can be about anything that's relevant for that episode. And
so basically you've got a board game that there's 100 different ways to play. You could replay it 100 times.
So the format is like 100 ways to die at work. So one board game would be for a specific type of situation. So we did one about diesel motor emission. So, and it's playing in a parking garage. We did one about called emergency response, and it plays in a recording studio. So
great. So it's a series.
It's a series. So, and the idea behind is that whenever we encounter a new company or a new stakeholder who says, "Hey, I'd like to do a game within my company that's very relevant, is this safety aspect or this health aspect at work?" And then we make a 100 ways to die version for that specific one. And she said, "Yeah, there's easy 100 ways to die at work." So we are momentarily we are number 3 of 100, and in the coming years, we will sure we can make 100 of these games. And the response is awesome, because, you know, blokes that have gone up very early to work all the day in harsh conditions, now we see them with their lunchbox and their coffee and their tattooed arm playing this game, and they really love it. And that's very rewarding to see. And also it gives them, that's what gaming always does, it has a certain frame of reference. Whenever you experience that game together, it's food to talk afterwards and refer to in a situation. And that's what gaming can do.
Also, I feel like there's a lot of storytelling potential in this, isn't there? Because it's a shared life experience. A lot of people have had some sort of risk at work type experience. I know I was working with a company in Cairo a while back, and I was trying to find something in the workshop for everyone in the room that would draw them out with a life experience that they could build on in whatever gamification it was. And I said, has anyone had a near-death experience? Every single person in the room had had a work-related one. And their stories were epic because they were worried about different things. It was like one guy had fallen through the floor, like a slight underwater, a gap hole in the floor in a factory. And he wasn't actually worried about the fact he nearly died. He was really embarrassed and didn't want anyone who worked there to know. And so, like, bringing out the different, like, ramifications made it a much more richer experience. And I can see, like, one thing games sometimes struggle to do is find the thing that people can relate to. But with Ways to Die at Work, I think you've got a rich seam to mine there.
I think you've got number 4 to 100 there as well in terms of the next Ways to Die at Work by a flight to Cairo. And just speaking to some local people.
And it's interesting because conditions and norms here in the West are different, because that's why what I encountered a few times, that things that work in the Netherlands or in the UK do not necessarily work in, let's say, the Middle East or South Africa or Asia. Also, when it comes to health, I have this insane example of where I was in Bahrain. It's an oil state in the Middle East. And I was there to do a session on gamification. And on the second day, people said, so this afternoon, we can't come to your session. I say, why not? Well, the Minister of Health will stop by to celebrate that it was an oil company, of course, said that we are already having 100,000 men day without any accident. And you would think that's a good thing, but at the moment that they told this to me, they already told me how they came to that number of 100,000. So people, whenever there was something missing, something went wrong during the play, let's say they got their hand in a machine, they were immediately removed from the scene. And if they did so within 5 minutes, it was not on work, whenever. So there were a very sketchy, dangerous situation only to come up with that number of 100,000 hours. So that afternoon they had champagne, and it was such a horrible example of, if you make the numbers so important, one, and two, it's, yeah, you can claim you're very healthy and you're very safe, but it's really the wrong way of gamification, right?
I guess there's probably a term for it, like health and safety washing, like greenwashing, that sort of thing. We're doing everything we can, but we're not.
Of course.
I'm gonna add. Because you've got such a wide experience and so many games you've created, what have you seen recently that you really like or didn't like? You know, anything that you're inspired by to work with in future or to avoid?
Well, I think gamification, understanding that we use it for the last 10, 11, 12 years, I'm constantly evaluating what's the value in the fact that we use game mechanics and elements from game in another context. And more, I'm starting to believe that game mechanics and aspects should belong in games. That's why I'm a big fan of game-based learning, because those make sense within the context of a game. So I think what gamification has brought us is sort of normalizing of the use of games and game-based elements in a professional workplace, but maybe more because people and organizations are hesitant to actually play. And then we say, oh, we just call it gamification, but we're still doing serious stuff, right? So more and more I'm thinking gamification, I'm not sure if I'm, or I'm still in with that, plucking some game elements and using them in another context is the best way to go. So I think that's what I've learned over the last 12 years when it comes to games and gamification.
So to paraphrase you, I think you're saying games are great. Gamification, maybe not so much. But then my definition of gamification is more it is making activities more game-like or play-like.
Yeah. We can always have a great discussion about that. And there are a lot of people within the community who will do that. But I think the more important group to convince is, of course, people who don't have any idea what you're talking about and make sense to them. Yeah.
Well, in that case, we'll round off the episode. It's been fantastic today to talk about how kicking in a hotel door to find your students playing Nintendo can be the spark to inspire a career in gamification, the role of creating awareness of understanding or using audio adventures for people living with visual impairment, and also the ability for games to raise awareness of the dangers in the workplace to minimize occupational mortality. Mikhail, it's been great having you on the show today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking with you.
It's been brilliant to catch up and hear a bit more about all the projects you've been working on.